Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Europe's B2B Tech Podcast. My name is Patrick, and I'm very happy to welcome Alex Neidenhoff, Head of Sales, Head of Direct Sales at Graph CMS. Hello, Alex. Really happy to have you here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you the second time, Alex. Now, let's dive right in. You prepared two tactical tips for our listeners. I hand over to you.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I've thought a long time, which should be these two tips. Number one, go and buy some solution yourself as a salesperson, as a sales manager, or let your team, if you are a manager, buy something out there. So that's the best tip I can recommend. It's the only way to actually understand how others do it, how bigger companies, better companies maybe, do it and learn from them. And the second tip, again, knowledge and learning is whenever you hire a new person, be it in your team or in another related team, let them demo or pitch the old solution they used to sell. Just learn, take that learning from the other organizations. It's a great chance to just bring it in and actually help this new person get used to the new company.
Love it. Great tips, Alex. Great tips. Let's go to the first one. I really like it. And I just had the experience myself because two of my salespeople brought in some tool that they wanted to maybe implement. So we were listening to a discovery call and then having a demo, and they realized, oh, those things that you taught me, that this makes actually sense because there's, you know, the value. It was a bit, so they understood why certain things, we implemented certain things, and sometimes it's really difficult, right? Even to say, hey.
It is absolutely. I mean, you generally, the way we teach is very frontal, like things that we know from our school experience are like, yeah, you should actually learn by doing and not learn by just listening. But in the end, although we know it, we end up just having our weekly training sessions that are somebody narrates, somebody shares stuff, and the others listen. And this is the actual learning by doing. So this is why I love this approach. And just over the last two months, more or less, I let actually two of my colleagues who are my sales account executive colleagues to just go out there and look for a buyer intent solution, in our case, something relevant for us to identify new potential opportunities. The other thing was a solution to help us with demos, actually, to better demo. And the thing is, they kind of realized the same thing. Oh, well, that's a good trick, that's a good tactic in the call. I mean, one tactic that somebody brought to me was just again hearing your name being said in a call, and they were like, yeah, I know we talked about this a few times, but we never do it, we don't think it's natural. But when the sales guy from this buyer intent company does it, suddenly I felt strong inclination to buy. We also identified some buyers that might be a good fit for us. I'm not saying go buy a solution so that you can steal good salespeople from the other companies, but it's also something that you can in the end do, or at least learn what you need.
Mm-hmm. That's another good tip, actually, Alex. So you realized using the name. I mean, if I'd say Alex a bit more, you realize, hey, that's actually very positive from the buyer's perspective.
Absolutely. It's one of those tactics that you hear a lot from all sorts of salespeople from both complex and less complex products. But it actually works when you hear it said from somebody like a teacher. Is like, okay, that's stupid. Who does this? But when you see it in action, usually from American salespeople. They do it, I believe, much more than European ones. You understand that it's a good idea. It's definitely shortening the distance between you and them, and it's definitely engaging.
Yeah,
dear listener.
Yes, sure. I heard at some point there's a small small area where you could say too much as well. Do you think that's also the case, or maybe in Europe even more, or maybe in Europe more than the US?
Yeah, I believe so. My personal sensitivity for BS and for people doing sales tricks on me is high. Like, I personally feel almost offended if somebody wants to do some tricks on me. I think most people are not like that because they are not in sales. Keeping it natural is fine. Increasing a bit the volume, using your name a few times more is probably not a problem. But if you do it in every sentence, it's an overkill. Just keep it natural, obviously. That's the part with engagement. Like, it's not a natural conversation if you spend 30 minutes just talking and demoing to somebody. It's not a natural conversation. It's much more natural to ask questions. So that's a tip. So it's fine to ask also the name from time to time.
Yes. I like it because we sell to salespeople. We just have to be really genuine and not using like tricks that we want to do something, because head of sales, they know all the tricks or most of the tricks, right? So it's like in our case, I think you don't sell to head of sales, but still important not to.
Absolutely. I think this is true for all sorts of people in Graph CMS. We sell to technical decision makers, to developers, head of engineering, and they are also sensitive to, for example, just talking without delivering direct value. Mm-hmm. And makes sense. This is why my teammates, this is why I try to be actually very to bring value in the sense of insights, of product information, things that the other side would care about right away. So even in the discovery call, you cannot just be spending time questioning them. You should qualify, of course, it's clear, but you cannot just be questioning them. And after the 30 minutes of a discovery call, the developer you're trying to show how you can help them is sitting there and like, oh my god, what did just happen? Nothing happened. No, there's no value for me from this. So just being helpful and then genuine and sharing some advice in the sales process early on, that's going to help a lot, also the sales process itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Second tip you mentioned is about pitching, right? Demo or pitch, that people do that in the hiring processes, or you ask them to pitch. Now, for you, what makes a good pitch?
Mm-hmm. Very, very good question. So actually demoing your previous product, we're talking about salespeople now, so demoing whatever you've used to demo up until a month ago, 2 months ago, is for the new company, so for the new team, it's a great chance, first of all, to just learn, especially if you've hired from a larger organization that probably has more knowledge, more established processes, more established tricks and tactics. So that's number one. This is one of the main reasons we've introduced this at Graph CMS, just this learning. And then the second thing is just seeing what, what's obviously the level of the person? Where should we focus on with this person? Like, is it the technical skills? Is it the presentation skills? What is a good demo? It is, first of all, should be very, very targeted and tailored to your audience. I personally fear the demos where you have 10 people from the other end, every single person from the customer's end is with a completely different role. I'm saying fearing these just because it's impossible to really tailor the demo to the needs of each single person. You need to spend 4 hours demoing to cover all the topics. We're doing this usually with enterprise grade leads and customers, but 4 hours in a Zoom meeting, in a Teams meeting, that's an overkill. It's a tough one.
For sure.
So just tailoring to what somebody cares. That's important one. It should be an engaging one. If we haven't received enough questions during the conversation, or we haven't asked enough questions during the demo, then something's off. So nobody's coming to the demo with our company or with any company so that they just watch a 1 hour movie. It's not like that. You want to learn something because you have some problems to solve. And these problems won't be solved by just a quick product onboarding. Like, a demo is not a product onboarding. A demo is a conversation, and the topic of the conversation is how 5 problems are being solved by this product.
Yeah. Cool. Very good. Very insightful. So the demo topic, when you talk about, we also talked about pitch. Is a pitch something different, or would you say pitch and demo can be used in the same way? Because what I usually understand when somebody tells me, hey, pitch me the product or something, like they want to hear a 1 minute 30 or a 2 minute like summary of what do you think about that? Do you also have that in your organization? Like, whenever the customer says, hey, what do you actually do? Or something like, this happens maybe on a party or somewhere else. Do you think it's important to have this, and how do you do that as well?
It is. We're not I wouldn't say we're a startup anymore. So just pitching around is not something that we do all the time, especially the sales team. We do it probably less than you would if you would go to startup events, but definitely having a short description of what you do that is targeted to a specific persona is relevant. You need to do that. Like, whenever I meet somebody and they ask me what I do, I make sure to actually understand what they do first. Like, I'm really asking, any chance you are working in IT, any chance you are a developer? And if the answer is yes, then I just really describe the product. It is an API first content management system. And then I could go into some details, and they are actually interested. If I hear it, somebody from another team or completely different space, I just start from afar. I try to give broad explanations like, well, every website has content, and we would be the place where you would store the content. Yes, it's you do this, of course, in the sales organization. We already talk with pretty much pre-selected contacts, so they kind of know what we're doing, and then it's all about differentiation.
I love it. I just did a podcast, I think podcast number 91 or 2, where I talk about pitching, and I actually said exactly what you said. First, I would make sure, hey, are you in sales? Is there any chance you are in sales, or are you a sales leader? And then you can target the pitch, even the 130 pitch, to that person.
Yes. Now, otherwise you're wasting people's time, and you're just going to open new questions that are not necessarily going to help. It's not true that your pitch should be targeted at your, what people say, at your grandma. But if your grandma is a salesperson, she'll get what you're doing, even if you explain it with complicated sales terms or with tech terms. You just need to understand what they're doing, where are they coming from, what's their context.
Yeah. So if I'd ask all your salespeople, Alex, would they say the same thing? Is that something you were like also training internally a bit, how to say these 130 minutes, or how did you do that?
We are. We have pretty clear definitions of our ideal customer persona and the different types of Graph CMS users. Half of them are developers, the other half are content managers, marketing folks. So they're pretty different where they're coming from. And every salesperson in the team should be able to communicate to both groups. We work mostly with the developers, so we are targeting most of our work to them. But they would agree with me, we do trainings also on messaging, just general messaging. And this is one of the things that we have internally.
To be honest, even with the developers.
Our developers or the way we pitch to developers?
Oh, yeah, that your developers also learn how to pitch, but I guess you pitch to developers.
So that's not something that we own, but also our developers are pretty pretty good at presenting and pitching. It's I would say an informal policy that we encourage everyone to submit proposals for talks at conferences, at events. And just on the top of my head, I think just in the last several months, developers from different units, backend, frontend, developer relations, have actually talked at a conference, well, pitching either the product as a whole or some of the innovations that we've introduced recently. So I would say it's still informal. We don't have like a training center just for pitching for everyone, but we definitely push everyone to just go out there. It's great for them personally, if they want to talk to people, but it's also great for the company. Like that, there's no better exposure for a technical solution like ours than actually having a developer talk about it. You won't see the sales team going and pitching the solution at developer events. We don't really do it most of the time. It's not as trustworthy as, say, if our head of product would do it or any engineer would do it. Even if we are able to answer most of the tech questions, we put super high value on actually being very technical and learning the tech stuff. Still, there is just a gap. I don't think it's only in my head. I definitely think it's just more genuine if a developer would talk about a developer product than if it would be a salesperson.
Yeah. Okay. And when I start at your company as a salesperson, do you have a build a playbook or is it kind of interactive or is it just with you or some team members? How does that look like?
Great question and great topic. I come from a sort of an educational background. My previous company was my own startup. It was a startup in the field of science communication education. So for me personally, educating your colleagues is super important. And onboarding is the make it or break it in the beginning. These first 30 to 60 days really crucial. Although we're not a massive organization, we already have a pretty detailed playbook of resources, topics, and goals that you need to go through or achieve. The resources, they cover regular things like product, tech landscape, or commercial approaches. Like, for example, our sales strategy is more or less driven by the MEDIC framework. All frameworks are somewhere the same, but this one puts high value on qualification and consultation. And then there are just a number of goals you need to achieve, like week one, week two, first month, second month. In addition to the self-learning with video, with content, with the product, you also have sessions with different teams. So it's not only the sales team, you would also get a session like introduction to product by our head of product or one of the product managers. You get an intro to design, intro to the company, of course, by the CEO. I think still in the end, the most important one is the shadowing. So as soon as you start, maybe even on day one, you will get into an actual customer call. You'll actually go there and listen how one of your colleagues is selling to somebody. And this is the great way to learn about the customer product, but also just about the process. Like, oh, what's this? It's a demo. It's a POC Q&A session. So that's the cornerstone for us, the shadowing. And one of the principles we also just have afterwards, even after you're out of onboarding, I call it a pair selling. It's a bit like pair programming, developers would know. Pair selling means that whenever you're in a call with a like sizable enough lead, you always have a second person there. If it's a hard technical call, you should get your sales engineer, your solutions architect. even if it's not, try to at least get another sales colleague to join you. You will catch issues. If you misspeak something, they'll correct you. They might just take notes. And it appears that you're, if you wish, that you're a large enough organization to have two people in one call. So, yeah.
Cool. Thank you for sharing this. Very interesting. I wonder, you said you get goals, like for the goal for the first week, for the first 2 weeks, three, and so on. How do those look like for a salesperson who starts? How does a goal for the first week, for instance, look like?
Mm-hmm. So the goals are, at least in the beginning, of course, they're not quantitative or revenue based. For good or bad, our sales cycles are at least a couple of months long, so we won't be able to close in the first week, most probably. Mm-hmm. They're more targeted at learning, at least for week one. Goal number one, learn the customer. So you would need to review a number of case studies, you need to review our materials about the ideal customer persona. You need to shadow calls. Week one goal, learn the product. So have a couple of demos with internal people, learn the process. This is where you would sit down with within our CRM. We're using HubSpot, used to use Pipedrive, both great tools. So be in your CRM, just read through a couple of deals, learn the funnel steps. So these are specific goals that you have. You also have other mini goals, like update your LinkedIn account, like put our beautiful cover on top, share with your community that you're now working at us. That's a good way to actually also generate some leads potentially. These are some goals for the first week. And then for the first month, one or two specific goals that were related to my original advice. Do a demo of your previous company's product or something about the previous company if you haven't been demoing something that's valuable to everyone in the new one at Graph CMS. And demo the product. That's about 1 month after you've started. You actually should be able to give your first proper demo. Having in mind that we're a tool targeted also at developers, that's not an easy one, but you get a lot of support to get there. It's a wonderful thing to just pursue. Yeah.
Nice. And when is the first deal? Usually, when do you expect the first one to happen?
From a new colleague, I think our record was the end of the second month already.
From A to set, as a really like, yes. Even self-generated?
Not self-generated, inbound. Inbound, self-generated, okay. Unfortunately, it's a longer game, but there was interest. So by the end of the second month, this is achievable. The sales cycle, in our case, usually longer, 3-4 months. But still, it's possible to also have shorter ones.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And that's also clearly in there. Hey, we like after 4 months, one deal is the target.
Yes. So that's approximately as a quota, basically, in a way. So yes, that's important. I think we're very ambitious. We already have a specific goal from the end of the second month. Of course, you can compensate by closing a larger deal in the future if you haven't made so yet.
Yeah. Do you have do we have mid-market as well as enterprise, or actually only enterprise? Mm-hmm. Because you mentioned medic, and medic I saw mostly used in enterprise deals. Do you also, if you have mid-market, do you also use it there?
Good question. We sell to different segments and verticals, which makes it easy and hard at the same time. It's exciting because you get to speak with a lot of companies. We have sold to governments, we've sold to growth stage startups. So you have everything in between. We use medic, or at least the principles of medic, which involve good qualification, consultation of the people, so not just product pushing, and multi-threading. So knowing that you need to work with several stakeholders and that you were not going to be the only person selling to them. You need to have a couple of people from your team supporting you. It's more like principles that we follow from the medic approach. And we use these at any sort of an organization. So probably not a smaller, let's say, startup that is between 50 and 100 people that could still matter revenue-wise to us. You're probably not going to speak with five people. As long as you've spoken with the head of engineering and the head of product, you'll probably be fine. But as soon as the organization side grows 200, 300, 400 people, you definitely need to speak also to marketing teams. There's already going to be some sort of security and procurement in place, and you need to also make sure that their needs and requests are met.
Yes. Okay. So you use basically the principles and qualification and multi-threading. What do you think in larger deals? Other than, I mean, it's really important, I guess, to understand the political landscape. That's usually what medic people, what they say you should be having a landscape, as well as, I think, the most important thing is the champion. And to really test the champion, does he have access to the economic buyer? Is he willing to push your solution? Is she only pushing your solution, not also the competitors? And does she have a selfish interest in pushing? I think that's the four categories for a champion if you really want to test.
Yeah, that's a good approach. I think that's a good overview. We are trying to follow these as well. I think the biggest problem is that you will very often be blocked, at least early on in the process, by the champion or the person who is not a champion yet not wanting to introduce you to the right people. You've either not done your job well or you're just too late to the table. Maybe they are already much further with the competitor. But that's what we try to ensure we achieve, like really develop this champion. And it's never just one champion. You need a couple of people. In our case, we need usually a technical lead and an engineer who is actually going to test and work with the system. So you need at least two on the tech side, and you need at least some sort of a buy-in from other teams as well. Some steps or some stakeholders come at a later stage, security, legal. You need to satisfy them as well. The work there is more sequential, it's not in parallel. Like, if somebody calls me today, hey, give me a demo, I can't tell them, by the way, can you also put me in contact with your security team? They won't do it, of course. So this comes afterwards, but this is something also to just not forget, it's going to happen. To give you an example of one of my favorite customer stories, I won't say the name, but it was a company from or organization from South America. And over, I would say, for us somewhere mid-market, so a couple of $1,000s per month, so already a fine deal size. And they had a project to pick a new content management system. They wanted to rebuild entirely their website. It's sort of a government regulated, so it was a complicated case. The project was closed, but reopened almost 2 years later. I was there, spoke to them, and in the end, I think I spoke to a total of 10, 12 people in the organization. Very often, they were all in the same calls. After the second call, this was May, I think, 1.5 years ago, I got a LinkedIn message for one of their team, and she said, "Hey, Alex, thank you so much for the support so far. All is great. I think you are definitely the right solution for us, judging from the product, from the pricing so far. However, can you help us out? Some of the team members don't speak English fluently. Is there any chance you can help us in Spanish in the next call and in the emails?" I don't speak Spanish. Love it. I'm currently on the Canary Islands, but I don't speak Spanish. But of course, I said, yes, we'll do all the best we could. And I started writing all of my emails in Spanish with the help of Google Translate and the review of one of my colleagues in the engineering team, who's based in Argentina. And for the next couple of calls with them, I always had either him or somebody else to partially translate, partially just help with technical answers. Whatever we produced, proposals, presentations, everything was already only in Spanish. And this is sort of the sort of information that you can only get from a nice champion. So
true. Yeah. Amazing story. Yeah. Amazing story, Alex.
Yeah.
And you closed them. Congrats to that. Them. And yeah. That's a great end of this call or of this episode. Actually, 30 minutes are quickly over. And thank you so much for joining, Alex. And thank you so much for sharing your amazing knowledge and these great tips. I think that was extremely valuable.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.